Well, today we're going to talk about art shows and what works and what doesn't work. And this is just the observations that we have made personally from November 2008 to March 2009. And I think it's important because of the way the economy is going right now, how the artists are reacting to it, the customers, the buying audience. I think this is all important or relevant for today.
Yes, absolutely. And also I want to mention that this is based on our personal observations at shows, since we go to art shows here in Arizona regularly, because there's a lot of shows, obviously, during the winter, spring and fall months, which are the nicest weather. In the middle of the summer, we fry, so nobody wants to go outside and buy art. But in the spring, winter, and fall, we have art shows every 2 weeks in Arizona. And so we go to a lot of these. And what we want to talk about today is what we noticed the artists are doing at these shows, you know, good and bad things, things that we think works and things that we think do not work, from our personal observations, and also from us purchasing art, because when we go to these shows, we also collect art and invest in art and buy pieces ourselves.
We do. We do regularly. So what should we start with?
We're going to start with number one.
Well, I have number one as greeting us as a customer.
That's very important.
So I've noticed more and more, you know, just from November through March, how a lot of the artists aren't even greeting us as we walk into their booths. Not just us, but, you know, everyone in general.
Right. And just to recap, you're supposed as a seller, as an artist selling your work, you're supposed to greet everybody that comes into your booth.
Or at least acknowledge, even if it's just a nod and a smile, at least you're acknowledging that the person is walking into your selling space.
Right.
I think it's important.
Yeah, it's a small space. You know, most booths are actually 10 by 10 feet or 10 by 20 feet at the most. And it's an intimate space. And if somebody walks in, you really can't act as if you did not see them. You know, they're here, you're here, and you have to make them comfortable immediately. And that's the attitude, that's the purpose for greeting somebody, is to give them the feeling that this is a friendly space, that they are welcome, that we're excited to have them in our booth, and that we are going to make them comfortable.
Well, what I've noticed from observing the people walking around at the shows that are buying art and drinking wine, you know, because some of it's a wine tasting show, is that they are genuinely having a great time. It's great weather. It's sunny. They're having a delightful time. They're looking at some great artwork. But the artists don't seem to have that same enthusiasm that the people walking around the show have.
Right. And if you're not enthusiastic, your customers won't be enthusiastic. We know that. People tend to get the frame of mind that the seller is in. So if the seller is excited, people won't be really excited about buying the work. If the seller is angry, people will feel negativity and tend to be angry themselves. So you really shape the feeling of your audience, of the visitors, through your own attitude, through your own way of being.
Yes.
And one of the things that we noticed due to the recession, I think, and due to the fact that some artists are dropping their prices way more than they should, is that you have a number of artists that have a sort of angry attitude. And you know, we wondered about what was causing that. And I'm thinking that it's because they're not asking enough for their work. Because if you don't ask enough for your work, you become a little frustrated. You know, we know that one way to check if you're priced high enough is by asking yourself, how do I feel after this sale? You know, you sell something, and then you ask yourself, well, how do I feel about this sale? And if you feel cheated, or you feel wrong, or you feel angry, you did not ask enough, and you need to raise your prices.
Oh, that's definitely true. I remember Michael at the last art show that we went to, our painter friend, when he said to you, you know, before we had prices on our paintings, but now we just take what we can get. And he said, Alan, you know, just make me an offer on any one of these paintings. I'll take it.
Yeah, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, whatever, you know.
And, you know, I'll take whatever.
Right, it's like, you know, throw your arms up in the air and say, you know, you decide, right? You, the customer, calls the shot. I don't care. I just want something, whatever. You know?
Exactly.
And that's just the wrong attitude, because, of course, as a customer, you want to pay as little as you can. You know, I mean, if somebody says, give me your price, you're going to say, you know what? I feel that today is donation day. I deserve a free penny, right? You know, I mean, why not? What are you going to do, right? And what if a customer comes and says, you know, that was $3,000? And Michael says, yes, $3,000. I say, well, I'll give you $500. And Michael says, okay, here, take it. And you pay and you go. How is he going to feel, right? Now he's got something that's like 25% of, you know, or 20% of your original price. It's ridiculous.
Right.
He's going to feel, he might feel okay for a couple of hours, but then 2 days later, he might become very angry. And all of a sudden, he's going to be angry when he meets the next customer.
Or depressed, or, you know, self-esteem.
But he's going to influence his customers with that attitude. He's going to be not pleasant because he feels that he got ripped off.
Well, the danger is also giving the customer that power, because then all of a sudden, they think that anything goes.
I know, they're in charge. The customer is in charge.
So.
And we always say that, you know, as a vendor, you have to be in charge.
Exactly.
You know, and the way we put it is that, you know, it's a nut house and you don't want the nuts to run it. You know, you want to be in charge of it. I mean, otherwise, people are going to come and give you $10 for a $50,000 piece. I mean, you know, why not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you give them the control. So what you want to do is control how much you're going to give away, right? So that if you want to offer a better deal because it's the recession, you want to soften your prices, what you want is control how that's going to happen.
I agree. I don't agree with calling it recession prices. That bothers me.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that going on. Recession busters, you know.
Yes.
Recession sale, you know. I mean, it's telling the customers, listen, the recession is a fact. And it's also a very negative word. Recession is not a positive word. So, you know, I think that it's better to not talk about the recession. I mean, I think we all know that there is a recession. The best is to talk about what people really want in a recession time. And what I think people want, and we've studied this and we've been in business for 12 years now, so I think we know what we're talking about. What people want is added value. I think people expect a higher level of value during a recession than during times when everything is going right. And I think that another thing that people expect is that this is a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. So they expect you to sort of cater to their needs a little bit.
Yes.
That doesn't mean give it away. But that means either
a little bit more service.
Well, or a lot more service. It definitely means increasing the level of service. And if you haven't offered service, it definitely means starting to offer service. And people might say, well, okay, I sell art. What kind of service am I going to give? It's not like I sell a car and I can change the oil and, you know, inflate the tires and
shipping.
Wash it. Exactly.
Shipping is a service. If they're local and it's a bigger piece, just delivering it to their home.
And warranties also.
Yes. Oh, definitely warranties. I've noticed now that since the artists are scared because of the recession, that the warranties are really going down. I mean, maybe they won't be warrantied at all, you know, because you're getting a recession buster price, so I'm not going to warranty anything. Or, you know, maybe it'll be warranty for maybe 2 weeks for 1 month, you know, with this fear that the customer is going to buy this artwork and then, you know, return it.
And we've had a student very concerned about that warranty, because we offer 1 year money back guarantee, and we had one student, we won't give any names, calling us and saying, how does it, is it working for you? Do you get all these returns? And we said, no, not at all. What do you mean? And he said, well, I was thinking that because you have a 1 year money back guarantee and it's a recession and people need money, they're all returning their artwork. And we had to tell him that we received no returns whatsoever. We actually haven't received any return for years.
Right? Yes.
And we have 100% money back guarantee on the artwork. Anybody can call and say, I don't like it and I want to return it. But people are not. Why is that? It's because if you have purchased artwork on the basis of an emotional response, not on the basis of size and price, which are factual technical aspects, but on the basis of an emotional response, and you hang it in your house and you show it to all your friends and you love having it and you're proud of having it and you consider it an investment and you consider it part of your art collection, there's no reason in the world why you should take it off the wall, put it in a box and send it back to us, because money is a little tight. You know, and there's not a reason. The reason why you would return it is because you're looking at it as dead weight, you don't need it, and basically you'd rather have money than the artwork. And the problem is that when you start to sell your work on the basis of recession busters and so on, that's when you're going to have returns.
Right.
Because if somebody buys a recession buster and they hang it on their wall, And they've bought it with that description, and they look at it, and things are getting harder, and they have less money than they had when they bought it. They're going to think, you know what? I'm going to bust the recession by returning this and getting my $300 or $500 or $2,000 back.
Right.
So that's why you don't want to do that.
No.
You don't, you know, the basis of selling fine art, the way we teach it and the way we know it's done successfully, is by selling it on the basis of emotion. That is, people buy photographs and buy art for emotional reasons, not for logical reasons. We don't recommend and we don't think that you can sell art by saying that's a 16 by 20 and that was done with the Epson 3800. You have to explain, you know, why you did this, what was your inspiration. You have to talk about the beauty, the color, your talent, your particular style, your, you know, whatever the content of the piece is, and, you know, make people make decisions on that basis.
Right. I remember that just recently on our Death Valley workshop in March, how we, you know, they did a little art show at the Death mm-hmm. Valley. I didn't even know there was a Death Valley Chamber of Commerce.
And we were there on the day of the show.
Yeah, we were there for a couple of days throughout the show. And I remember the young artist from Independence, California, you know, who was selling, you know, unusual artwork.
She was selling artwork
made out of recycled
road signs. Yeah,
sign
artworks, and most of them were cats.
Yes, most of them were cats that she had cut up, and then she was using like rivets and everything
to hold
riveted.
Them. To yeah, because yeah. she was using the tools from the sign shop.
Oh, exactly.
You know, which is basically a department of motor vehicle, right?
But I remember when we were looking at her work, and I knew she didn't have much experience
right.
selling because,
no.
you know, and she was young, mm-hmm. you know, but when she said, gave us the out by saying, you know, I understand if you don't want to buy anything because of the recession. And I was thinking, no.
Yeah, and
you
I
don't
was,
want to say that.
Right. Well, you were thinking that because you were thinking what was her best, you know, chance of selling something. But I was thinking that I wasn't sure if I wanted to buy a cat made out of a road sign. And when she said that, I thought, great, I don't have to.
Right.
She just told me it was okay not to buy.
Exactly.
And you don't want to do that.
No.
I mean, let people make up their minds. If they don't want to buy, they can very well say, listen, I'm not ready to buy today. It's a recession. But don't tell them, you don't have to buy because it's a recession. That's like, you know, committing suicide in a business way.
It is. You don't want to tell a potential customer the reasons why they shouldn't buy
right.
your artwork.
Now, let's think about what she should have done or what she could have done in order to make a sale, right? Because we eventually did not buy anything from her.
No, we didn't.
So what do you think she could have done to generate a sale?
I would have asked if you were interested in any particular piece. You know, which one is your favorite? Mm-hmm. Because she had a whole
right.
selection of cats.
She must have had 20
you
or
know?
50 of them. Yeah.
Or, you know, do you have a cat? Do you like cats?
Right.
You know, and
which
you,
we do. We like cats.
Yes, and you grew up with cats, and your sister loves cats. So potentially, this would have been probably a gift for your sister.
Right. But
maybe
told
not
us,
for us.
Right, she told us we had no reason to buy, so we did not buy. We listened to her. I mean, something that's very important in selling is that the customer, if they like your work, will believe what you say. Why should you lie? I mean, you do this because you love to, you're an artist, you're very excited. If you tell them all of that and you explain to them why that would enrich their lives, why it has an emotional content and why, you know, other people might very well enjoy having it as a gift, there's no reason why they shouldn't believe you.
Right.
But if you tell them, on the other hand, listen, you don't have to buy because it's a recession, same thing. There's no reason why I shouldn't believe her because I'm giving her credit. I mean, most people, you know, I would say 99% of the audience will take you on your word.
Right.
And we forget that. So if we tell them why not to buy, they'll take us on our word. If they tell us why to buy, we'll take them on our word.
Well, I thought she was selling something that was, you know, obviously totally different because
right.
I've never seen anybody make artwork from recycled road signs.
And you can only make each of them once, right? There's no two alike.
Exactly. What was I going with this?
That it's unique artwork.
I lost my train of thought, so.
Well, that's all right. You'll find it back. But definitely she had very unique artwork. She has a product that nobody else has. And she has an emotional appeal, which is, you know, it's very artistic. It's made in a very unique way. It's
very creative.
An animal. It's very creative. And they are very, very low price. I mean, we were looking at, what, $25? What was the most expensive?
I think the most expensive was $40.
So the price range may have been from $25 to $50.
Right? Or 20. I think yeah. The entry point may have only been
so
20.
So she definitely made a mistake in how she talked to us, presenting giving us reasons why not to buy. If you give somebody reasons why not to buy and they're hesitating, they are guaranteed to walk. On the other hand, there's a number of things that she could have done, and one of them was to point to the emotional content, like you said. Another one was to divide our collection, because it was all shown helter-skelter, that is, everything was confused on one big table, all the pieces. She should have divided in categories, and I always recommend small, medium, and large.
Yes.
Which I think is the big discovery of American marketing. You know, it's used widely in fast food, but it's also used to sell all sorts of things. It's simply not labeled small, medium, and large.
But also each piece, because these were almost like little sculptures. Each piece really didn't have its own space or to set it apart from another sculpture. So when I was looking, I had a very difficult time isolating them from the other objects. For me, everything was just kind of running together. And I was having a hard time looking at what was standing out, you know, what caught my attention or eye or which piece stood out for me. You know, I had a very difficult time.
Right. And when you do that, when you present everything, you know, helter-skelter, very close together, packed, you pack as many as you can on one table, what you're really doing, and of course, it's unconscious on the part of that artist, and it's unconscious on the part of many artists, but what you're really doing, what the message that you're sending to the customer is, I'm selling wholesale. Because if you compare a wholesale store to a retail store, what you see, and I know that most people don't walk into wholesale stores, but we do. We go to Gallup regularly where they have wholesale jewelry stores, Indian jewelry, and we go to the same stores that have retail stores. And very often a trading post will have wholesale in the back and retail in the front. And there's no better place to learn the difference. And the difference between the two is simple. The first thing is when you go into the wholesale section, you have basically jewelry or artwork packed together. You see 50 of them in one small space. You go into the retail section, they're isolated one at a time onto a nice black cloth so that you see that jewelry and nothing else. And very often, because we buy, you know, wholesale and we go into the wholesale area, when I go into the wholesale area, I see things and they are so close to each other that they become jumbled in my head and I don't see anything. Then I go into the retail section and I'm like, wow, I really love this bracelet. That's fantastic. And the lady says, well, you were touching one in the back. You did not pick it up. And I'm like, oh, well, I did not see it. Can I see this one now, right?
Right.
And then we make actually our wholesale decision based on the retail showcase, right?
We do.
Very often we have to look at the retail showcase, the retail display, and then say, okay, that's the one I want. Let's go into the wholesale section.
I think we actually buy very little in the safe. Which is the wholesale section, because that safe just has everything crammed in together.
Right.
And I can never make any decisions.
No, I mean, sometimes I feel like I should just take a handful of it.
Yes.
You know, okay, I'll take that. Okay, that's going to be 10 grand, you know. Because, yeah, the value of each piece of jewelry, and these are all handmade pieces of jewelry. These are not machine-made. They are each handmade by an artist, one of a kind.
Inlay work.
Inlay.
Silver work.
You know, you name it. Stone work, you know, jewelry made of gold and silver with rare stones, you know, Indian jewelry, very, very high quality. We look at it in the wholesale section, and it's all packed together so much that no piece is emphasized.
No.
You don't really see each individual piece. You see a mass of valuable jewelry.
I usually see just a mass of color is what I see. Just color.
And the value is diminished, and also the ability to choose is diminished. And so we go into the retail section where pieces are isolated, where there's a foot or two between each piece, and it's displayed as a showcase, you know, with lots of room. And there we can make our choice, and then we go back in the back and buy wholesale, so we have the wholesale price.
Right.
But what happens in an art show is this is a retail show. This is a show where wholesale has no price, no room at all. And so the problem that lady had was not knowing the difference between wholesale and retail.
Well, I think the other problem I had was I did not know how to display those pieces because they were so different. I've never seen anything like those little sculptures made from road signs before. If she had them, instead of just laying on the table or even told me how to display it in your home or even asked questions, does this go with your other decor in your home, which of course it didn't, you know, but had given me some sort of ideas on how to display it and where to display it, or I think that would have helped a lot because I could honestly could not figure that out on my own.
Right. But I think that question to me is answered by the way she displays it. because her display is supposed to mimic the way you're going to display it in your home. Because if you don't know what to do with it, you're not going to buy it.
But it didn't work for me the way that she had it displayed.
Because her display was a wholesale display. And I go back to my point, if you display your work as wholesale, first, people are going to be unable to choose because they have the problem of mass. Second, they don't know what to do with the artwork because they cannot display that many of them on one in their home on one spot. And then third, they expect wholesale prices. Because obviously, if it's displayed in a massive way with no particular attention given to any piece, there is no work done at the level of isolating the piece, there is no work done at the level of the decor, you know, beautiful presentation, then you think cheap. Right. And I mean, you know, her work was very cheap, you know, very inexpensive. Not it was made cheap, but it was sold cheap. $25 to $50 is hardly anything for a piece of artwork.
Wow.
Now, how should she display it? Well, the way any sort of fine art product is displayed, you only show a few pieces. I mean, you might have made 100, you only show 5. That's it. And you increase the price from $25 to $50 to $250 to $500 or to $95 to $300. Okay, so there's another way of things that she wasn't doing that she should have done and that would have brought much higher sales level. The first one is dividing the collection in three categories: small, medium, and large. And we know why, because you know people don't want to buy the smallest, they don't want to buy the biggest, but they'll usually, for the most part, buy the medium size. You know, and also they have now a way to control spending.
Right.
They can spend a lot, moderately, or little.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So three sections, and then in those three sections, three or four pieces of each, you know, and that's it. And then if you want more, you say, you know, I really like this, but I can't find any of them, then maybe it's time to go and into the box and find a few others.
Right.
But that limits the selection. And it's done widely for selling all sorts of things. You know, very high-end luxury items. You know, if you sell, you know, I always compare to cars, a very unique edition of a car, you know, car manufacturers like Lamborghini, Ferrari, you know, Porsche make, you know, limited editions all the time. They don't display them all in the showroom at the same time. Because how can you pick between 12 different editions, right? You have one, and when it's sold out, we have the next one. You have to control, you know, as an artist, you have to control your creativity in a way. If you cannot control your creativity at home and you just keep cranking out, merchandise, artwork like crazy, then you have to control how much you're showing. Because you can't expect the customer to be able to make any sense of it.
Right.
If you are very, very productive, and obviously she was, that's fine, that's great. But just make an inventory and then show only a few pieces at a time.
I agree.
That's the solution. And always small, medium, and large. You know, the small, medium, and large version or idea is what I call the great discovery of American marketing. It's used widely in selling all sorts of things. When we bought this house that we live in, we bought it on the basis of small, medium, and large, except they use different names, right? They called it, the small houses were called Discovery. The medium houses were called what? The Journey?
Yes, the Journey.
And then the large ones were called the Destination. And we did not know that when we bought our house. But we went back to the HOA office.
The selling office.
The selling office. Yeah. And there was this big display. And I looked at it and the lady said, oh, you haven't seen that. This is how this community is marketed. Discovery. Small houses, Journey, medium-sized houses, and Destination, large houses. And we laughed because we had bought the large size, so we had gone to the Destination without going through the Journey, I guess.
Right, but I remember we had a very difficult time, and because our first house was at the very...
At
the Discovery level, we had a very difficult time going from Discovery to Destination because we missed a whole entire step there.
Right. But nobody explained it to us.
And nobody explained it to us, not even the person that was selling the house, who obviously knew all of this information. And it would have really helped us in making a decision in buying that house probably faster. And we would have felt more comfortable because we knew there was something...
Something was missing.
Something was missing, but we had no idea what we were
right.
What
so
was
the,
missing.
So the salesperson did not do her job.
Exactly.
You know, not to say that she was a bad salesperson. She was a very good salesperson, but she missed an essential thing, which is we had a house at the size of the Discovery level, and we were looking at a house at the size of the Destination level. And if she had looked at us and said, well, you obviously have some difficulties making a choice here.
And this is normal.
Right, and this is normal because let me explain what is going on. What is going on is there is three levels of homes here. discovery, journey, and destination, and you're going straight from the discovery to the destination, bypassing the journey. A normal process would be to go from discovery to journey, and then from journey to destination.
Exactly.
That's an easy step. And we would have agreed, because right. Now we were like, wow, okay, so the price has doubled every time, for example.
Exactly.
And she could have said, now you're trying to jump one step, which is fine, but you know the difficulty is that it's a big jump. And we would have been enlightened.
Right.
That was the missing link, you know. The thing, we were like, I can't decide, I'm not sure if I want to buy this. And, you know, there's a missing link, and she knows what it is, but she doesn't think it's worth telling us, right?
Right.
And it would have eased the process, you know.
Oh, it would have. It wouldn't have taken us 1 month to make a decision, right. I can tell you that.
She would have had a sale faster.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it would have been good for her. And then she would have prevented the possibility that we just walk, because what if we can't make a choice? Well, people who can't make a choice, they just walk.
Right.
And very often when you sell art, you know, you have a lot of people that walk, you know. And we know that's a problem for artists. That, you know, we call them, you know, looky-loos or b-backs or tire kickers, you know, they can't make up their minds, you know, and they look at you and they say, oh, how long are you going to be here? And you're like, well, I'm going to be here until the end of the show, you know, obviously. And they're like, well, you know, I'm asking that because I think I'm going to be back. And, you know, we know that out of 100 people that tell you they'll be back, you're lucky if you get 5 back.
Right.
You know, very, very low percentage.
Well, I think going back to greeting, you know, us as a customer, or, you know, greeting everybody that's walking around the show. I just wanted to talk about how Amado Pina, you know, he's a famous painter. Indian painter in the Southwest, who has a gallery in Santa Fe and has a huge ranch there, from what I understand when we were talking to him. Mm-hmm. And I remember as we're walking through the show and you just bolted all the way to the left, and you were walking really fast. And so I was just following you, and because I knew something was up, because you were so excited. I mean, I saw the excitement level just growing. I was like, oh my gosh, what's gotten him so excited? And then I saw you approach Amado Pina, and you said, you must be the artist. And he said, yes, I am. And I remember he was, you know, sitting right in the front of the booth where he can't miss not one single person, and he also had one of the largest booths in the whole show.
Yeah, he must have had a 10 by 25 or 30. He had 3 booths.
I mean, a lot of artists had 10 by 10s, and he smiled at you, and he said, yes, I am. And I remember he was so approachable, and he was just so relaxed.
He was very positive.
He was very positive. He was smiling, you know. And I remember you looked over at his ties, you know, because he would sell silk ties. We bought one in Grand Canyon at the El Tovar gift store. And you bought one, and you said, you know, I have a tie. It wasn't, you know, of the same design that he was selling that day. And you said, but, you know, I never wear it. And I remember he looked at you and he giggled and he says, I don't wear ties either. Yeah. And I thought, this is great, because he's relaxing us.
Yeah.
You know, he's laughing about it. We were relaxed.
And he's making me feel comfortable, because I obviously bought the tie because it had one of his paintings on it.
Exactly.
Not because I wear ties. I never wore it.
And I think it was of horses running,
of horses,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But
he's not making me feel inadequate by saying, well, you know, you should wear it. If he had said that, I may have just
walked
at him and said, you know, I'll be back. How long are you going to be here? All day? I'll be back.
Exactly.
You know? Because, you know, people... You know, most customers want to be polite. They don't want to be offensive.
Right.
And so instead of saying, you know what, I don't like you, I'm not coming back. You know, they don't say that. They say, you know, how long are you here? Oh, all day. Oh, okay. Well, that's great. I'll be back a little later on. And they are gone. That's a way of excusing themselves.
Right.
But I did not have to do that because I was comfortable. He was not imposing any particular thing on me.
No. And he didn't make you feel bad because you didn't wear the tie or never wore the tie or, you know.
I'm an art collector, not a tie wearer.
Exactly. You know? And then I remember his friend Mike. He has a friend Mike that helps him, you know, man the booth. And I remember I was carrying the pottery because we had just bought some pottery from not too far from his booth.
No.
And I remember I was carrying that, you know, big sack of pottery that I just bought. And the first thing that Mike did after he greeted you and I, and he said, you know, if you would like, you could set your packages over here on this table, you know, which was, you know, past their booth, behind their booth a little bit. But I could see everything, you know, nobody was going to run off with our merchandise. And, you know, at first I declined because, you know, I didn't want to commit myself
because
to...
Because we know what he's doing.
Exactly. Right. And I didn't want to, you know, because I thought once I set my bag down, then, you know, I'm going to be, you know, getting involved or, you know, this is the first step of, you know
well,
what I'm
saying.
Well,
you're almost like moving in.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, like, can I put my my things here? You know, I need to take off my shoes, you know. And we know exactly where this is going. I mean, the more comfortable you are, and the longer you spend in the booth, the more likely you are to buy.
You
and
are.
The more
right.
you're going to buy if you do buy.
Right.
Because, you know, obviously, if you put your stuff down, you're going to take time now to roam through. And now you're lighter. You're more comfortable. Things
exactly.
are easier. They might give you something to drink. They might ask you to sit down. I mean, you just put your finger into a gear and you might be taken into that gear. So you have to ask yourself, you know, do I really want to do that or not?
Right. So at first, you know, I held the packages. And I remember Mike said, well, have you ever seen any of Amado's work in person? And we said, no. And he said, well, let me show you around. So he showed us the originals.
Right.
And I remember he was telling us about each piece, which I found very interesting because Amado wasn't talking about his work himself,
no.
but Mike was.
Yeah.
And I thought Mike was doing an excellent job.
Right, he was.
And then as Mike is taking us around the booth, you know, not everything was original, but there were a lot of originals.
Mm.
I remember thinking, you know what? I'm going to buy an original, and I don't care which one it is.
No.
But he's here. He's a famous artist, and I'm not leaving until I buy an original. I had made that decision in my mind, and
mm-hmm.
that's when I decided, you know what, I'm just going to put my package over there.
Right. And what's interesting is that first, the person that's doing the selling, Mike in that case, doesn't know what you've made as a decision because it's in your head.
Yes.
Right? And he can't read your mind. So he doesn't know. All he knows is that the process is moving forward.
Right. Yes.
You know, he doesn't know if you're going to buy or not. And
no.
if you buy, he doesn't know what you're going to buy. And so, you know, when you place yourself in the position of an artist, you know, you're basically in the position of Mike, which is doing his job, going through his routine, making the customer comfortable, having them put their stuff here and there so they don't have to carry it, showing them the work, explaining the work, and asking questions.
Yes.
You know? And you really don't know where it's leading. But, you know, if you do this with everybody that goes in your booth, your success rate becomes very, very high as compared to just looking at people and answering your cell phone.
Exactly.
Right? Which is, you know, this, I think at Pinia, we both agree, is a sort of apex of mastering salesmanship.
Yes.
You know, for all the different reasons that we mentioned and more. While you have artists that are almost at the lowest possible level in terms of salesmanship, you know, and those are the artists that answer their phone or talk to other artists or eat and drink in their booth and never pay attention to you.
Well, and I also remember, you know, after Mike showed us all the pieces there, I also remember him asking if there was a particular
right.
piece that stood out that we liked, you
right.
know. And then I remember you pointing to a couple of one. Well, I like this one, and I like this one too.
Mm.
And I remember he said, you know, a few more things about both of those
mm-hmm.
pieces. But I also remember, and which I really appreciated, was that he also excused himself so that we could talk, you know. Because I think you and I knew that we were both, you know, that we both wanted a piece and we were going to buy one. But he gave us the time to discuss which original
right.
we were both interested in.
Which is exactly what we do when we sell work.
Right.
I mean, at some point, if it's a couple or several family members or friends that are buying together, we know that we explain everything we have to explain. We answer their questions. We ask questions about what they like and don't like. And then it comes a time when it's for them to actually discuss what they want to do.
Right.
And we really don't have much of a role to play there. You know, eventually it goes in their house and it doesn't go into our house.
Right.
You know, so you have to give them that freedom. But you don't want to give them too much freedom.
No, but he stepped
right.
he
yeah.
stepped aside, but he was constantly,
mm-hmm.
we were constantly in his field of vision.
Right.
So that when we had made the decision, boom, he was right there. And
right.
you said, that one. He
yeah.
said, not a problem. Then he... This is the great thing. The one of the greatest marketing things he then gave me was the clipboard. Do you
right.
remember that?
Yeah, I was shocked at that because we've made a decision and normally, and we buy a lot of artwork, what we do is we pay, we get the artwork sometimes in a bag, sometimes we just don't get a bag and we just go and say, great, thank you very much, please come see me again. And we're like, okay, you know, we don't even have a card sometimes.
But the clipboard, you had to fill it out if you purchased something so that you would get the certificate of authenticity mailed to you.
Right. And
that
the,
it was an original
right.
painting.
And this is brilliant because, of course, we use the credit card, you know, but with a credit card, you get the name, the address, and the phone number of the person. But, you know, they can be their billing address, not so much their mailing address. And so with the clipboard, what is, and then of course, if people don't use a credit card, they use a cash, for example, or a check, you don't get anything sometimes. You have the address on the check, but unless you write it before you deposit the check, which is very easy to forget, you don't have anything. And so often artists have no way to get in touch with their customers. And we know that the most important aspect of a business is your previous customers.
Right.
Your true asset, where you have the most potential for making new sales, are your previous customers. They already sold out on you. They bought your work, they love your work, they love you. They are in the perfect position to buy from you again. There's just one problem. What if you don't know who they are?
Right.
And most artists don't know.
I thought this was so great. So I'm filling it out because you don't like filling out forms. So you're talking to Amado and just having a great time.
Taking photographs with him.
Taking photographs with the artists, which we still chuckle about, because I remember when people would do that when they bought artwork from you, they would want to take your picture. And then here we are doing the same thing.
We've gone full circle. I mean,
I know.
That's the part that I love, because I've gone from being totally destitute, having no money of my own, selling my work and having people ask me to take their photo with me and the artwork, you know, so that they can have a memory of buying my work, to now, you know, being fairly well off, being able to invest in expensive art and asking the artist to take a photo with me and the artwork so that I can have it for my collection. We've gone full circle.
Right.
And we know exactly how they feel because we've been there, you know.
I do want to talk about that form on the clipboard,
right,
because I thought it was a great marketing
tool.
So as I'm filling out all of our personal information so I get my certificate of authenticity, you know, because this is an original painting.
Right. You want that certificate.
I do want that certificate. You know, it asks for the email address. But also what I found very interesting, it's how did you hear about Amado Pena? Was it Southwest Art Magazine? Was it his Santa Fe gallery? I mean, these were some of the choices that you chose. Was it just walking around the art show? For us, it was walking around the art show, recognizing the artist, and boom, going right over there. Because Amado doesn't necessarily, he does the big Indian markets, but a lot of his artwork is sold through galleries. So you don't necessarily see him in person selling his own work. So, you know, I was Xing that we had just walked by, saw him at a booth, you know, just walked by, but which was very interesting because they're getting a feeling for how did you hear about him? So they're gathering information. Would you like to accept the newsletters? And this was great because we have received those newsletters and
over email,
and it's great.
And newsletters are fantastic. I mean, because what it does is first, you know, it gets your email address, which is very important. And then now we can, and then you check the box, I want to receive the newsletter. And now you're getting the newsletter, which obviously is an opportunity for him to market to you.
And he does.
But the way the marketing is done is very nice because first he lets you know which shows he's going to do in your area.
Exactly.
So we now know what shows he's doing.
And when he's coming.
And then the second thing is if you print that email and you give it to him, you get
what? 20% off. Just print the email.
Which, you know, on $1,000 purchase would be $200. So it's not negligible.
Right.
And that's a very important point because a lot of artists give a discount, which is fine, it's a good idea, but many of them will give 5%, 10%. And we know for a fact that when people want a discount, they want 20% minimum.
Exactly.
If you give 5% doesn't do it at all, 10% doesn't do much, you have to go to 20%, and he's got it. I mean, this guy is doing so much right.
He is.
Actually, you just wonder if he's doing anything wrong, right?
Right.
And I don't think so far we've seen any mistakes.
No, he was so pleasant.
I mean, I asked Mike because I was like, okay, I'm talking to you, and you're obviously a helper. So I looked at him, and I'm very direct. I say, so how does that work? And he says, well, I do the selling, and Amado does the painting.
Exactly.
It was so simple.
Well,
easy enough, you know. And Amado was laughing, and said, you know. And I said, well, why aren't you painting? Because he wasn't painting.
Right.
And he said, well, I just hurt my wrist, and so I can't paint this week.
He hurt himself. Right. Yeah. And because Mike was explaining that normally, you know, he'll be working on a painting, you know, during the show so everybody can see him.
And all of these questions are important because something fundamental to selling is that as long as the customer has a question, that customer won't buy. And so if somebody asks you a question and you don't answer, either because you don't want to or you don't know what the answer is or you did not hear it, that sale is not going to go through. You got to get an answer. And the answer can be very simple, but the customer wants to get that answer. Obviously, it's in the back of their mind. If I had asked Mike, okay, so how does that work? You sell Amado seats over there, and he said, well, you know, that's the way we do it. That doesn't answer my question. I'm not going to buy. Right. Because there's something weird here. Mm-hmm. And it might not be weird. It's just that I have this feeling that I don't get it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you want to, the reason why people buy, I mean, there's many reasons, but one of the reasons is because you have, the path is clear.
Mm-hmm.
All objections have been lifted. All problems have been dismissed. You know, if they are not, there's that thing nagging at you, you know, you know, we ask a lot of questions.
We
do. And that's because we experience buyers. You know, we want to know what we're getting into. We know that once, you know, it's much easier to not spend your money than to regret spending it, right?
You know, I enjoyed so much spending my money there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't hesitate to.
Let's do it again.
Of course, yeah, it was such a wonderful experience.
And the next time we probably would spend for more.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Because that's the thing.
I would invest in a more expensive piece and a larger
something
piece.
Something that I want to touch upon very quickly here, in terms of you know what I mentioned, which is your best prospect are your previous customers, and it's so important that you have a way to get back in touch with them. And the reason for that is not only because they've bought from you and they like what they have and they're going to buy again. The reason for that is because the next time they buy, probably it won't be a bigger purchase. And I think a lot of artists don't realize that. You know, if you really like a product that you've purchased and you say, you know, I really like that product, that brand, be it art. You know, Amadio Piña is a brand, just like Alain Brio and Beaux-Arts Photography are brands.
Definitely.
You know? They're not brands on TV, but they are brands in the way they are marketed. If you like that brand, you're going to go back, and now you want to go further into the brand.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, in terms of cars, you know, we like Porsche, and if we buy another Porsche, we'll buy a bigger one, or a more powerful one, or one that's more expensive. We're not going to buy the same thing.
No.
We've been there, done that. We want to go beyond it.
Exactly.
And so, you know, of course, at one point, it becomes extremely expensive, but the brand, one of the responsibility of the brand is to offer something else, something higher and bigger. You know, and as an artist, you have to offer that. You have to offer that possibility to go up into a higher level of investment into the brand.
Well, I think that was just a wonderful experience. I think what we should talk about next is the very different experience that we had with the next artist afterwards.
So we're going to take a short break, and this was the good.
this was the good. Now we'll get to the bad and the ugly.
That's right. That's exactly right. So let's take a break, and then we'll be right back with part two of this, what to do and not to do at shows.
Sounds good.